Welcome to Weekly Wisdom with John Sampson, the podcast where we explore the timeless connections between ancient wisdom and modern science to provide practical solutions to the real problems that we all face. I'm your host, John Sampson. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsors.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
You know that intense feeling when someone wrongs you and you just see red, feeling overcome with rage? We're all bound to experience it from time to time, and most of us manage it well. All it takes, though, is one time of succumbing to those impulses to have a huge detrimental impact on your life or the lives of those around you. It could put you in physical danger, cost you your job, cause you to lash out and say something to a loved one that you can never take back. So that's why it's important that we figure out how to manage it in a constructive way. Today, we're going to do just that. We'll explore how ancient philosophers from Greece and Rome to China grappled with the nature of anger. From Plato's spiritual psychology to Aristotle's ethical pragmatism to the Stoics' radical self-control, we'll see how they viewed anger not just as a feeling, but as a moral challenge. And then we'll bridge the gap to the 21st century, revealing how modern psychology and neuroscience are providing us with a scientific map of the very same terrain. We'll uncover how ancient wisdom and contemporary research are speaking the same language, guiding us toward a shared goal, not to eliminate anger, but to master it. Two of the Western world's most influential thinkers, Plato and his student Aristotle, laid the groundwork for our understanding of anger. Their ideas, while distinct, both offered a thoughtful departure from simply seeing anger as a brute, animalistic impulse. Instead, they saw it as a force to be understood, educated, and ultimately, ethically guided. Plato, in his masterwork, The Republic, discussed anger within his tripartite theory of the soul. He called this aspect thumos, a term with a broader meaning than just anger. It encompassed spiritedness, pride, courage, and the powerful impulse to defend one's honor and dignity. Plato divided the soul into three parts: the rational, which thinks and reasons, the appetitive, the home of our base desires, and the spirited. Plato saw thumos as a crucial and at times volatile ally of the rational part, helping it to fight against the unruly appetitive part. He famously illustrated this with the charioteer allegory from his dialogue Phaedrus. He imagined the soul as a charioteer driving two horses. The charioteers are reason. One horse is the unruly black horse of appetite, driven by lust and hard to control. The other is the noble white horse of thumos, which has a love of honor and is generally obedient to the charioteer's command. This allegory is key to understanding Plato's view. Anger, or thumos, is not to be eliminated. It's a powerful emotional engine, a noble horse, but it must be properly trained and aligned with reason. When it is, it becomes a moral energy that allows us to stand up to injustice and embody courage. But if it's left untamed, it can become a source of violence and a tyrant within the soul. Plato's vision, therefore, is one of harmonization, where each part of the soul performs its proper function under the watchful eye of reason. Now, moving from Plato to his most famous student, Aristotle, we find a more pragmatic and ethical approach to anger. While Plato's view was rooted in the soul's architecture, Aristotle's was centered on the concept of virtue. He didn't see anger as a separate part of the soul, but as a passion, a feeling accompanied by pleasure or pain that could and should be subject to ethical judgment. In his Nicomachean Ethics, Aristotle applied his famous doctrine of the mean to anger. He argued that virtue is a midpoint between two extremes, an excess and a deficiency. This is what he called the golden mean. The virtuous state of anger, Aristotle said, is mildness or good temper. The two vices on either side are irascibility, the excess of anger, or inirascibility, the deficiency of anger. He broke down his view in his Rhetoric, defining anger as a desire accompanied by pain for apparent retribution. It's an emotion of seeking revenge for a perceived slight. But the key, Aristotle said, is to express it correctly. He famously wrote, "Anybody can become angry. That is easy. But to be angry with the right person and to the right degree and at the right time and for the right purpose and in the right way, that is not within everybody's power and is not easy." This is the essence of Aristotle's approach. He argued that failing to get angry at injustice is a moral failing. The person who tolerates being stomped on is a slavish fool. So a virtuous person is neither indifferent nor overly sensitive. Instead, they are appropriately responsive. For Aristotle, anger is not a vice to be purged, but a tool to be sharpened. Now, this philosophical tradition of Stoicism takes a much more uncompromising stance against anger. Its most powerful advocate, the Roman philosopher Seneca, saw anger not as a potential virtue, but as a fundamental disease of the mind. Seneca's work on anger is one of the most systematic critiques of the emotion in all of Western philosophy. Unlike Aristotle, who sought moderation, Seneca argued for eradication. He saw anger as a brief madness that is fundamentally irrational and incapable of serving virtue. For the Stoics, all emotions are not just feelings. They are faulty judgments. They arise from our mistaken belief that external things, like insults, slights, or injustices, are truly harmful or beneficial. Seneca argued that to rely on anger, even moderate anger, as a tool for justice is as foolish as relying on drunkenness or madness for courage. Seneca's definition of anger was clear and uncompromising. It is a desire to take vengeance for a wrong, which is at its core a form of irrational desire. The goal for a Stoic is apatheia, not to be confused with apathy. Apatheia is a state of being free from these destructive passions. It's a state of inner tranquility and moral clarity achieved by using reason to correct our false judgments. Seneca offered practical, therapeutic advice that still resonates today. He recommended delay. Put time and space between the provocation and your response. He said the best plan is to reject straight away the first incentives to anger. And premeditation. Mentally rehearse situations that might make you angry so you can prepare a rational response in advance. And last, self-reflection. Keep a daily record of your angry thoughts and outbursts to better understand their triggers and patterns. For Seneca, anger is not something to be managed, but a poison to be purged. The wise person does not get angry. They use reason to administer justice with a calm and impartial mind. And I can tell you from personal experience that I've used these approaches to effectively manage situations in which a younger, more immature version of myself would have reacted angrily. For example, if you know you've got a meeting with a colleague at work who just seems to get you fired up or acts belligerent from time to time, thinking through possible scenarios of how they might behave can help you to prepare your response in advance, so you're not relying on your immediate reaction in the moment to determine your next steps. One benefit of doing this in advance is that it also incorporates the delay aspect, so you can experience mentally what the situation will provoke in you and see how you might best want to respond. Even when I do this in my head, I sometimes have to talk myself down from the things I would want to say to come up with a response that would be more beneficial in the long run, rather than just make me feel satisfied that I scored some points in the moment. Now let's look at some Eastern philosophy, where Confucius and his followers offered a perspective on anger that, while different in its ultimate goal, shared a similar emphasis on self-control. For Confucius, anger was not an evil to be eradicated, but a natural human disposition that, if left unchecked, could destroy the very foundation of society, social harmony. Confucius's core philosophy centered on the cultivation of the gentleman, or junzi. an exemplary person who practices self-control and ritual propriety. In the Analects, a collection of his teaching, he gives a simple but profound piece of advice. When anger rises, think of the consequences. Now, to do this, you have to pause and reflect like Seneca suggested. But it also highlights a key difference from the Stoics. While the Stoics focus on an internal moral error, Confucius is deeply concerned with the practical, social consequences of our actions. Unchecked anger, he warned, can endanger your own life as well as that of your parents. Confucius also praised his favorite disciple, Yan Hui, for a specific quality. He did not transfer his anger. This means when he was angry, he did not project his frustration onto unrelated people or situations. His anger, if it arose, was contained and directed toward the specific offense. Ultimately, Confucius saw a place for righteous anger, a moral indignation at a grave injustice. But the truly cultivated person is not driven by personal grievances. They are a force for harmony and balance, and that requires disciplined emotion. Pardon the interruption. We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. So we've explored the wisdom of the ancients, but how does this translate to what we know about the brain and mind today? What do a Greek philosopher, a Roman statesman, and a Chinese sage have in common with a modern psychologist or neuroscientist on this topic? The answer is, surprisingly, almost everything. Psychologically, anger isn't just an automatic reaction. It's a cognitive process rooted in how we interpret events. The cognitive appraisal model is a cornerstone of this understanding. It suggests that anger is triggered when we interpret an event as unfair, threatening to our self-worth, or intentionally goal-blocking. For example, being cut off in traffic might not make you angry on its own. It's your appraisal of it, your thought that a person is a disrespectful jerk and is doing this on purpose, that generates the emotion. If you appraise the situation as, a person might be late for a medical emergency, your emotional response would be different. This cognitive element explains why rumination is so destructive. When we endlessly replay an anger-inducing event in our minds, we are not just reliving the memory, we are reappraising and refueling the angry emotion, keeping our bodies in a heightened state of stress and preventing a return to calm. Modern therapeutic approaches directly address these patterns, offering concrete strategies to manage anger. Cognitive behavioral therapy is the gold standard for anger management. It's a pragmatic, skills-based approach that helps individuals identify and challenge the irrational beliefs that trigger their anger. Therapists guide clients in using cognitive restructuring to reframe these thoughts and replace them with more rational, balanced ones. It also teaches behavioral skills, like taking timeouts and using controlled breathing to interrupt the escalation of the emotion. Mindfulness-based interventions help individuals develop the ability to observe their angry thoughts and feelings without judgment. This non-reactive awareness of internal experience, the hot sensation in the chest, the urge to shout, detaches a person from the automatic escalation cycle and fosters a more calm and centered state of mind. Acceptance and commitment therapy encourages a values-based approach. It focuses on helping people accept the existence of anger as a natural emotion without allowing it to control their actions. The core principle of acceptance and commitment therapy is to guide individuals toward committed action, making choices that are aligned with their long-term values, not dictated by short-term emotional urges. Now let's look at things from a neurological standpoint. At its core, anger is a complex biological process driven by multiple regions of the brain and a cascade of neurochemicals. The central areas driving this neurological reaction are the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex. The amygdala, located deeper than the temporal lobe, acts as the brain's threat detector. When we perceive a provocation, whether it's a physical threat or a social slight, the amygdala instantly sounds an alarm, initiating the body's fight-or-flight response. This triggers the release of stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol via the hypothalamus, causing a rapid heartbeat, muscle tension, and heightened arousal. The prefrontal cortex, The most evolved part of the brain, located right behind the forehead, is our executive and regulatory hub. It serves as the brain's brake on impulsive behavior. When the amygdala sounds the alarm, the job of the prefrontal cortex is to assess a situation and determine a rational, intentional response. For example, the amygdala might signal threat in response to an insult, but the prefrontal cortex allows us to pause, consider the consequences, and choose not to lash out. A critical finding in neuroscience is the imbalance in these two regions. In individuals with poor anger regulation, such as those with intermittent explosive disorder, the amygdala shows hyperactivity and a quickness to react, while the prefrontal cortex and its connections to the amygdala are underreactive or impaired. This means that the rational brake is weak, allowing the impulsive accelerator to dominate. In addition to these core regions, other areas play a role. The insula helps become aware of the physical sensations of anger, the heat or tightness, while the anterior cingulate cortex monitors for emotional conflict and helps guide our response. But the most powerful takeaway from modern neuroscience is the concept of neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to change and adapt throughout our lives. Think of your current anger response as a well-worn path in the forest. It's easy to walk down because you've taken that route countless times. Therapies like cognitive behavioral therapy and mindfulness work by helping you build a new alternate path. When you consciously choose to pause, reappraise, and respond calmly, you're literally strengthening the neural connections between your prefrontal cortex and your amygdala. At first, it's a difficult, effortful journey. But each time we do it, each time we make that conscious choice, the new path becomes a little wider and the old one starts to grow over. Over time, that new, calmer response becomes your brain's default, and the angry, impulsive response is no longer the automatic choice. You're no longer just managing anger, you are fundamentally rewiring your brain to choose wisdom over impulse. So if you're someone who knows that they have a temper and tends to get angry quickly, or you know someone close to you who fits this description, don't lose hope. You're not destined to always be that quick to anger person. You can actually retrain your brain to respond in a more productive way. It just takes a little deliberate work on your part. So we've explored the rich history and science of anger. Now let's put it all together into a practical multi-step process you can use to master your own anger. One that isn't just about controlling an outburst, but about training your mind to respond with wisdom rather than react with impulse. The first and most critical step happens in the moment of provocation, when you feel that initial surge of anger, the rising heat, the pounding heart, the tightening muscles. That's your amygdala sounding the alarm. This is where you must intentionally activate your prefrontal cortex and apply the practice of the pause. Seneca advised us to reject straight away the first incentives to anger. This is a conscious, intentional delay. Take a deep breath. Count to 10. Walk away from the situation for a few moments. This physical and mental pause creates a crucial window of opportunity, allowing your rational mind to regain control from your emotional alarm system. Without this pause, you are simply a slave to your instincts. And once you have paused, the next step is to reappraise the situation. Anger is an emotion driven by your thoughts and interpretations. As modern psychology's cognitive appraisal model teaches, your anger is not caused by the event itself, but by the meaning you assign to it. This is where you apply the wisdom of Confucius. When anger rises, think of the consequences. Ask yourself, is my appraisal of this situation accurate? Is the person truly trying to disrespect me, or could there be another explanation? What will happen if I react with anger right now? Will it make the situation better or worse? This step transforms you from a victim of your emotions into a thoughtful observer. This is where the rational charioteer gets to try to take command of the horses. You begin to attack the bad qualities in yourself, as Confucius said, rather than blaming others. With the physical pause and the mental reappraisal complete, you are now in a position to choose a response that aligns with your values and your virtues. This brings us to Aristotle's doctrine of the mean. The goal isn't to be angry or not angry. The goal is to be appropriately angry, to the right degree, at the right time, and in the right way. This is where modern acceptance therapy comes in. ACT encourages you to accept the presence of your emotions without letting them dictate your actions. Your response should not be dictated by the urge to vent, which only reinforces the anger. Instead, your response should be a deliberate, chosen action aligned with your values. If your values are to be a calm parent, a respectful partner, or a trustworthy colleague, then your actions should reflect that, even in the presence of anger. This might involve using an I statement to calmly express how you feel, or it might mean engaging in a constructive problem-solving conversation. The final step happens after the event. Your journey to master anger isn't over when the moment passes. This is a practice of lifelong self-cultivation. Just as Plato believed in training the spirited part of the soul, modern neuroscience confirms that our brains are incredibly plastic. Every time you successfully apply this process, pausing, reappraising, and responding virtuously, you are strengthening the neural pathways between your prefrontal cortex and your amygdala. You are literally building a stronger brake system in your brain. The more you practice, the more these virtuous habits become second nature. It takes effort, but over time, your brain will become rewired to naturally favor a calm, rational response over an impulsive, angry reaction. This is the ultimate goal: to embody a state of mind where anger is no longer a tyrant, but a force you can master. From the philosophers of antiquity to the neuroscientists of today, the central challenge of anger remains the same. It is a force that is both essential and dangerous. Plato saw it as a noble ally. Aristotle saw it as a virtuous tool. Seneca saw it as a wicked madness. Confucius saw it as a threat to harmony. And modern science sees it as a complex interplay of brain regions and neurochemicals. Yet all of them arrive at a shared conclusion. Anger, left to its own devices, will consume us and our relationships. The path to a well-lived life is not through its suppression, but through its conscious, rational mastery. It's a journey of self-cultivation, a process of thought, reflection, and practice that is as relevant today as it was more than two millennia ago. So I encourage you to take this timeless wisdom and this modern science and apply it. The next time you feel the rise of anger, remember the four steps we've discussed: the pause, the reappraisal, the response, and the aftermath. Practice these steps with intention, and you will begin to rewire your brain, one mindful choice at a time. The power to master your emotions is not a gift. It is a skill waiting to be developed. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Weekly Wisdom with John Sampson. Make sure you subscribe, and until next time, thank you for listening.